stop. To a death in the situation, I'm too shy. And though the road is rocky, I'm ready to try. The next mile, the bridge side to the blind man. It's down to the left child. We will survive in this country wilderness. Swimming through the waters of Babylon like a rebel fish. Jungleist, specialist, predator and survivalist. Spitting heaven fire from his lips. Burn a slave driver.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, New Media for the New Millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people will turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. All thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your host, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to get involved in the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live audio at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com. which is the homepage, and catch the live stream at that location. We're streaming live audio at www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening, and the live stream is playing there also. We're streaming at abibitumi.com. That's abibitumi.com/timeforanawakening. They stream from Ghana. Or you can download the TuneIn Radio app to any of your devices. TuneIn Radio is a free radio app. In that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you had the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, you can type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you'll always see interesting content being posted daily by myself or Brother Richard. And do me a favor, before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for an Awakening media is also there. Always full of the latest podcasts and the various programs on Time for an Awakening media, interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, and share with your friends. Also, check out that Time for an Awakening marketplace and our partnership with BB Toomey. Always interesting things in the marketplace all the time. Various African language classes, classes on education, economics, social systems, health, and much, much more being taught by professors on both the continent and in the diaspora. So, again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. It's timeforanawakening.com. TimeForAnAwakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. It's 6:07 on the Sunday edition of Time for an Awakening. This Sunday marks the first edition of Time for an Awakening. Our guest this evening in conversation, Pan-African researcher, broadcast journalist, and author, Brother Kiti, the Conscious Rasta Awadu, is with us this evening. His latest book, of the over 30 published, his latest book, The Conscious Roots, Growth, Heritage, and the Biology of Being, will be one of the topics of discussion this evening with our guests, and you can join in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
1, 2, 3.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 6:12 on this Sunday edition of Time for an Awakening. Before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7 Denard Street, Brother Richard. Is with us, Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
I'm fine. I'm fine. I just went through, went to a meeting of two of the foundational organizations in Philadelphia, as far as Mother Bethel AME Church and St. Thomas. And the reason that becomes because it kind of relates to our discussion with Brother Keedy and his new book. The conscious roots, growth, heritage, and the biology of being, because it kind of frames, the need for us to be able to build, organizational structures, but you have to have a solid foundation, internal foundation, if I'm reading this book. So I'm glad to be in conversation with him this evening.
Richard, before we bring Brother Keaty on, what was the, because I wasn't aware that they were gathering, what was the gathering in reference to?
Well, because in acknowledging a part of this here, 250, but there are two ministers acknowledging the origin of these churches, right? I mean, these are the foundation of Black Philadelphia as far as institution building. The African Methodist Episcopal Church, which was the AME Church, which was Richard Allen's, and African Saint Church of St. Thomas, which is the foundation of Absalom Jones, and how they, came together to create, the Free African Society, how they came together to build really the institutional, Professor Wilson calls them the proto basis of classical Black nationalism. There was that because this is at the time when we're in Philadelphia, America was building this new nation state and excluding African people, and African people here were building institutions, building a people, not an identity, and that's what they were coming together to acknowledge that history.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, we'll probably get into some of that in upcoming shows, and maybe have one of them or two of them or both of them or representatives can come on and kind of talk about it and expand the discussion.
Oh, yeah. They had the historians for those churches as a part of the panel, and that was one of the reasons I wanted to hear historical narrative of their origin.
And that kind of builds into the project that you're working on, too, as far as with the young people about our experience here in this city.
Right.
During those periods. Okay. Well, Richard, I guess tonight is going to kind of expand that discussion to a more relevant. And when I say relevant, I'm talking about more up to date experience to what we must do as a people. Some of the things we need to institute or reinstitute. And we're going to go deeper in that with our guest this evening, Pan-African researcher, broadcast journalist and author, Brother Keaty Owadu, is with us this evening. Brother Keaty, how are you, sir?
We black and we shine. What a joy it is, an absolute joy to be with you and Brother Richard this evening. We black and we shine. First of all, let me just start off saying it's a pleasure for me to listen to you talk, you two talk with each other, because as a Pan-African, I am a little bit intolerant of conversations that are irrelevant, unattached to something that's going on. And so listening to you two talk in a calm voice, it's really encouraging to me. I'm going to do the best I can to represent us to this evening.
Listen, I'm glad to have you back on with us. You've been on periodically over the time that we've been broadcasting, talking about some of your books. I think you're over 30 now. As far as published works.
No. My 64th book came out today. 64 books as of today.
Okay.
That's pretty awesome. But I'm on course to set the record. So we're going to do the best we can. And we make the books relevant. Now, we're talking about looking at the news cycle and what the news means to us. I must say it was in December 2024. That I published this book, and it's called Disaster Preparedness for World Wars 5 and 6. We saw the massive U.S.-Israeli attack assault on Iran. We have to understand that's World War 4, the global war against Islam. But it's also touching on World War 6, the NATO-U.S. bloc versus the BRICS bloc. So we're going to get a chance to get into that. I love the book. I made some very serious predictions in disaster preparedness, of which the Black community largely ignored me. Now we're going to find out as of tomorrow Will there be any consequences of having ignored a very bold warning?
Yeah, well, listen, I'd love to get into some of those topics tonight, and I can't wait till we do that. Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I didn't know that
we're on a roll.
I didn't know that you put that up. Oh, okay. We're good. Good, good. Listen.
I will send you both a copy of the book if you need it.
Okay. That sounds great.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say, Elliot, I looked at in the back of, and I didn't see 64, so I'm glad to hear Brother Keaty bring up how many, because I was going to say, Elliot, Brother Keaty and Professor, now his name just goes.
Malefi Asante?
Gerald
Horn. No, Gerald Horn, because they produce books like people drink water.
thank you for comparing me. I appreciate that comparison. Gerald Horn is one of my absolute favorite researchers and scholars.
Yeah, but I did see that in the book title, and I was saying, oh, that is relevant to now. And I'm glad you brought up about the context, and I hope we can be able to merge in a discussion that about NATO and BRICS and that the Southern Northern Hemisphere conflict that is about to is developing, and this is where your biology of being part in relationship because we're dealing with the whole thing of an evolution of a biological system, even though we're talking about war and power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very important. I do believe both of you were able to receive your copy of the Conscious Roots.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And
yeah,
we're through it.
Yes, sir. Well, for our listening audience, let me give a brief two-paragraph introduction to the book from the back cover.
Mm-hmm.
Conscious Roots, Growth, Heritage, and Biology of Being weaves together cutting-edge biology, African our story, and Rastafari philosophy to argue that true human flourishing depends on reconnecting body, ancestry, and community. The book contends that modern society's core error is mistaking growth for disconnection, chasing technological progress while severing ties to tradition, nature, and collective wisdom. Using the metaphor of the seed and the soil, it shows how cells, like seeds, carry ancestral memories of trauma, resilience, and adaptation, a reality now illuminated by epigeneticists. I frame the human body as a temple. This is very important. The body is a temple and is an ecosystem rather than a machine, emphasizing the microbiome, the mitochondria, and circadian rhythms as biological expressions of what Rastafari calls livity or vital life force. The text explores how plant-based ital nutrition, and that was my entry. Movement and stress, regulation, resolve, restore coherence across these bodily systems. So it goes on. It's about a 3 or 4 minute introduction you'll see on the back covers of all of my books. But we've tapped into something that is just really, really incredible. Ask me anything you like. I'm very excited about this topic.
Let me do this because you read some of the portion of the back cover, but I'm going to introduce it like this, Brother Keaty.
Mm-hmm.
You, right in the beginning of your foreword, you have some quotes there by some different professors. Let me read this one, and then I'm going to read your definition of the conscious root, because I want you to expand what you're saying here and show how important it is in this present environment. Although things haven't really been much different for our people since we've been here, but in this present environment, how we develop, if we're not aware, or how we strengthen those conscious roots. Now, let me read a couple of things that you state here. You have a quote here. It says, historical trauma is the cumulative emotional and psychological wounding over the lifespan and across generations, emanating from the massive group trauma experiences. And this is by Dr. Maria Yellow Horse Braveheart, an expert on historical trauma among indigenous and African American populations. And she mentioned here about the historical trauma and the cumulative emotional, psychological wounding of generational trauma. Now, let me read what you state here about the definition of the conscious root.
Mm-hmm.
This is in the introduction. It says, this parable is told across many cultures. A tree that forgets its roots will bear no fruit. Yet in our modern world, we have been taught to believe that growth means leaving the past behind, that progress requires severing our connections to what came before. We chase after innovations while dismissing tradition as superstition. We pursue individual achievement while ignoring collective wisdom. And we measure success by how far we've climbed rather than how deeply we're rooted. This is a fundamental error of our age. Talking about our people in this vein, tell us how important it is for us to redevelop, if we don't have it, or strengthen those conscious roots.
One of our most profound leaders of all time, the great Marcus Messiah Garvey, said, a people without a knowledge of their history is like a tree with no roots. So we have to understand what those roots are and how vital and important they are. We do know that a tree without its roots will die. It can't feed itself. It can't nurture its seed, and its leaves and branches eventually rot and fall to the earth and become food for the next generation that will occupy that space. All of that's very, very important. So you and I, we have within us the seeds. I like to say it like this. As I reach for the stars, I always remember that I'm standing on the shoulders of my great ancestors. So without utilizing this roots to feed the temple and the ecosystem which is within that temple, we starve ourselves of perhaps the greatest source of strength, power, wisdom, and that we could possibly have. So the book is a calling to people, and it uses a lot of language from the Rastafari community, and that's very important to me personally, and I think it would be important to everyone else once you know about it, to restore our roots. And I mean, I could go on and on. I hope I satisfied your question.
You did. In page 5 there, six, you got a passage there that says why this matters now. Let me
That's
read
right.
a couple of paragraphs there.
It That's says, a very good quote. Thank you.
We stand at the crossroads. The dominant culture tells us that progress means transcending our biology, conquering nature, and leaving behind old ways. Technology promises to upload our consciousness, edit our genes, and optimize our bodies as if they were machines to be upgraded. This path leads to not to liberation, but to a deeper alienation from the very source of our strength. The alternative is the path of the conscious root, to grow, not to deny our nature, but to by honoring it. Not by severing connections, but deepening them. Not by forgetting where we came from, but by drawing strength from that knowing. You know, this environment that we are in now, that's anti-black, that's destroying any vestiges of things that our people have experienced since we've been here in this land of our enslavement. How important is it? Based on that passage that you said, how important is it to really redevelop this mindset among our children? Because this where this target is really zeroed in on. It's not zeroed in on me, you, Brother Richard, maybe some of our listening audience. This assault is basically aimed at our children. How do you see that, Brother Keaty?
Well, interesting that you asked that particular question, because the book that immediately follows this one deals with the technocratic war on African fertility and food. So because we were unprepared to adequately respond, react to the earlier threats, they're stepping it up, stepping it up. It's not just an assault against Black people's integrity, although I will say, from a Black person's self-interest, there is nothing more important to me than assault on our integrity. But it is assault on the very integrity of nature itself. And as you and I very well know, the most tangible thing that we have that is greater than ourselves is Mother Nature. And so we failed to use the power that we could have gotten had we known all along, just reach into our roots, to our ancestral roots, get your strength back, and then hold back the beast, put down the beast. Because we did not do that, the beast has gotten very aggressive. They think that they're smarter than Mother Nature, God, as you would say. But that's just not true. And so at a certain point, we have to realize the pain, the suffering that we endure because we did not act earlier to stop them. Now it's going to only increase. At a certain point, we have to let everything go and reset, go back to base one, and we don't want to go that far.
You know, some of the things, because I'm going to kind of go back and forth, but Richard, you jump in here. Mm-hmm.
You know, I appreciate the context of this book. And you heard me, and I brought it up in my opening about the biology of being, right? And mm-hmm. And where the discussion on our exchange is going on now. And the reason why, because I've been using or trying to develop protocell as the development of protocells as a formation of, you know, self-organization and, you know, emergence. But what you're raising, and this is my first question, you know, is to be clear, are you saying it's important for us to acknowledge trauma?
Yes. Absolutely, yes. We have a tendency to want to ignore trauma, even as it is ongoing. The problem with that is that trauma only worsens our condition until finally we get so far behind that there's no chance for recovery. But yes, we must acknowledge trauma, and the trauma is passed on. It's what's called epigenetics, which is a word that means beyond genetics. We actually write the trauma into the mitochondria of every living cell in our bodies. Here's the thing, and this book establishes this, the way that our conscious being, the biology of being, talks to our DNA is food. Food. We're actually talking to our DNA through food. And once we understand this process, and I hope I do a good job of explaining how we use food to talk to our DNA, I'm hoping that people will realize we've always been in control. At least when we had the chance to select the food that we would eat, how we would eat. Dr. Sadie touched on this when he talked about African food for African bodies. Well, Dr. Sadie is very profound, brother, and he would say the most wonderful, complex things in a simple manner. We sure do appreciate Dr. Sadie for that. I do stand on his shoulders as I say, we can go even deeper into this conversation. Thank you, Dr. Sabi, for opening that door.
And the way I'm coming to this and I'm moving, and I'm glad that you, because that was going to be my next question in helping to define what epigenetics is, which is a new mm-hmm. scientific understanding mm-hmm. in relationship to that things, how interconnected things are to the biological past that the president. Mm-hmm. If I'm characterizing, and where you said about food, I'm looking at chapter 10, you know, the building conscious community. I'm thinking about the because it, even in the choice of the type of food that is necessary for our biology, it has, in order for, as Elliot said, to be passed from one generation to the next, it has to have a sense of shared values, a shared mm-hmm. belief. And beliefs are just like a sense of being because it's a part of our consciousness. Can you build on, based off of that, why is important or how you developed in that whole thing of building a conscious community, the importance of shared values?
That's right. That's right. And I'm going to get to that quote that opens up chapter 10, because that's one of my absolute favorite quotes in the book. But what is happening is, and this idea of epigenetics, I learned it from reading Bruce Lipton's book, The Biology of Belief. And now we're talking in this book about the biology of a being, which is being, to me, is, I would say, the next step beyond just believing. Let's go ahead and let's become. Let's be. Being is an action word, and become is, in this context, it's everything. So the biology of being. So we're on, you and I have determined a trajectory, and we have launched ourselves and our families, hopefully, on this very trajectory. And during the course of that trajectory of the biology of being, we come to realize that just like my body is a temple, an ecosystem consisting of 37 trillion individual cells all collaborating and working on a sense of community, now we have to look at the larger community and see how can we, on this planet, African people, 1.756 billion of us, how can we collaborate, cooperate? So that leads me to this excerpt that I think is very appropriate here. This is from the Nobel Prize winning Wangari Maathai, the Kenyan woman who won the Nobel Prize and one of the founders of the Green Belt Movement. She says, and I quote, "We are called to assist the earth to heal her wounds and in the process heal our own. Indeed, to embrace the whole creation in all its diversity, beauty, and wonder. This will happen if we see the need to revive our sense of belonging to a larger family of life." What a beautiful quote. I love Wangari Maathai.
And as I pass it back to you, Elliot, one thing, and I appreciate what you said, Brother Keedy, in relationship to being, right? Because in the African principle, as far as Kemet, right, the symbol of the Hepra, right, was the process of becoming, right, in relationship to that. The whole thing of the dung beetle was, you know, from being to becoming, right? And that the temple, or these temples, were a basically established to be the human body. I mean, the whole process. So you're making that in reference to your book, you're making that connection to that ancestral philosophical knowledge that can be seen written on the wall about the process of being and becoming. I think that that's important. You know, I'm glad that you brought that up, and how these values connects us as global people, African people.
That's very profound, my brother. I couldn't have said it any better than that.
Brother Keedy, Richard just introduced something else that you had that's a constant theme throughout the book. When you talk about dieting and eating and mesh it with the conscious mind. Now, we've had people here, both men and women, that have been involved in liberation struggles in this country for our people. And some of them used to express that they changed their diets. I'll use Malcolm as an example. So are you contending that it's a necessary factor to change our eating habits in order to, how can I say, in order for more things to be revealed, to strengthen a man or woman to be capable of being in this battle? Is it an important, how important is it? Just say, for example, if I have a poor diet, but I'm still involved in the liberation struggles, going to meetings, meeting other conscious sisters and brothers, how important is it for that person to become whole, to basically change themselves and in essence change their mindset? Talk about it from that
perspective. Good question. Probably of the 64 books that I've published, probably half of them focus in specific on various aspects diet, longevity, nutrients, etc. And we do say at one point that body needs 8 critical nutrients, classes of nutrients, to be able to survive and to thrive. Those are hydration, vitamins, minerals, amino acids with a full, or protein with a full spectrum of amino acids, enzymes, fiber, carbohydrates, and essential fatty acids. Body needs those 8 nutrients. And here's the thing. In this junk food culture that we're in, fast food, convenience food, junk food, a lot of people are eating on the hog, the carcass meat. And I don't mean to be harsh to people, but I'm not putting nothing dead and decaying into my stomach and therefore into my body. That just doesn't make any logical sense when we don't need it. So what has happened is our temple, that sacred being that we are incarnated with, has become polluted, corrupted. We look in the corners of the temple, and there's rot in here, and there's rot everywhere. And you can only see, if you take a measure of the national health of the nation, the United States of America, and then of the sub-nation, African-American or African people in America, we can see that this is catastrophic, it's disastrous, and it cannot persist into the future. Some might even go to say, and I've written books to say just this, it's deliberately designed to be so, to maintain this course, and it is designed to take as many of us out of their pathway as possible. An American Dilemma, The Negro Problem, and Modern Democracy, the book by Gunnar Myrdal, spelled it all out in 1944. Very clear instructions to get rid of the Negro.
Hey, Elliot and Brother Keaty, would you, if you don't mind, because that, you know, what they present, I'm looking at your chapter 10, and it goes beyond the Western understanding, right? Mm-hmm. And could you, if you don't mind, what do you mean by that? That we must go beyond, based off of what you and Elliot have spoken to so far, we must go beyond the Western understanding.
Well, the Stockholm syndrome. You brothers know what it is. I'm correct?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And as we bought into the Stockholm syndrome, we kind of accepted the fact that these people were ultimately so very smart. And so we gave up so much of what was important to us so we could be accepted by them. And quite simply, it didn't work out very well. So when we're talking about Western understanding of food, of medicine, talk about the Western understanding of how the mind, body, spirit all cooperate to give us this vesicle, this vehicle that we're calling a temple herein, even the Western understanding of a temple, even the Western understanding of how to use biotech properly so that they're not further corrupting the temple. These people are now are talking about transhumanism. You know they have gone way too far when they're talking about we can make man better by implanting our technology in him. So we're in our African knowledge, and you don't have to be rich to connect to your cultural heritage and your roots, but you've got to be smart. You got to be able to decide is the convenience of a burger, fries, and a milkshake, is it worth the sacrifices I make in my and my children's health by feeding them convenience food? No, no, no. So we're going to just stop live in our tracks, and we're going to back up and now come to an overstanding. I did not say an understanding. We're going to come to an overstanding of the reality of how the biology of being, how I am going to coordinate this and give me back what I originally had on this planet, and that is supreme power.
Brother Keaty, on page 59, it's in chapter 4, but I'm glad that we're talking about this right now that has been introduced, because the book kind of, to me, it kind of splits it into two things, to developing your body and then developing the mind. Now, on page 59, you have some bullet points here, because I want you to take each bullet point and really kind of expand that, what you have here.
All right.
Under eating for longevity, you got the path, and you start with eat food that are recently alive, then you go down to several others. Take your time and break into each one of those and fully explain what you're saying here and the importance of developing those conscious roots through this path.
That's right. And that's one of the reasons I love writing. You know, I teach a course, The Pen is Mightier Than the Sword. Actually, the name of the course is From Pen to Power, 90 Days to Write and Publish Your Book. So when you ask me how you get 64 books done, I wrote the course on writing a book. So the first one, eat food that was recently alive. The closer to harvest, the more intact the information. Again, I said earlier, food is how we talk to our DNA. Grow your own whenever possible. Buy from local farmers. Choose fresh over stored, whole over processed. So we can see we're focusing in on high quality food with that first bullet point. Should I continue?
Yes.
Next, eat the rainbow. No, I'm not talking about the gender confusing crowd. Eat the rainbow. Every color represents different phytonutrient families, different genetic conversations. Aim for diversity across meals and across weeks. The more varied your plant intake, the more complete the information your genes receive. Now, when we eat the colors, we got to realize you can grow three different fruit-bearing crops in the same soil, but their fruit all come out different colors. That's because the plant has an affinity for that particular mineral in the soil. And so the plant draws those minerals and then forms the colors. The more bold, the bright the colors, it lets us know the food is living, that it's recently harvested, and that it's got the depth of minerals that we need. Number three.
Brother Keaty, before you jump to three, let me go back, because you said aim for diversity across meals and across weeks. So are you saying that maybe each week it should be certain foods that should be eaten, maybe like greens 1 week and different vegetables the next, or can you mix them? Explain what you mean by across meals and across weeks.
Well, seasons. We're eating for the seasons, the grand circadian rhythm of the entire year. And in this book, you will hear me talk about the circadian rhythm very, very much, because we know the pineal gland is very important. Circadian rhythm is how our body regulates our relationship to the sun, the solar, and it also regulates our body's relationship even to the moon, a woman's moon cycle, and it relates how we relate to the seasons. So as it is right now, many of us are eating completely out of season, like the seasons don't matter. We're eating apples at a time when apples would not naturally be harvested, or strawberries in other times. And so the preservation of those foods, as well as the distance that a food is traveled from harvesting it until we consume it, all really does matter. So grow your food and grow it in season. And that's why shopping farmers markets is so important, because most farmers markets, they're not going to be using a lot of preserving food over the course of seasons, et cetera. Number three, center your plate on plants, legumes, whole grains, vegetables, fruits, nuts, and seeds. Let these form the bulk of your calories. If you eat animal products, treat them as condiments or occasional additions rather than centerpieces. And of course, I have not eaten animals products since I was 33 years old. So that's what, 38 years now. And there's nothing at all I miss about consuming what I call carcass food. Eat foods your ancestors would recognize. Would your ancestors recognize Oreos, or would they recognize Fruit Loops? No. Eat foods your ancestors would recognize. If your great-grandmother wouldn't recognize it as food, approach it with suspicion. The body has not evolved to process substances invented in the last 50 years. And many of these substances are artificial colors, artificial flavors. You have this thing called castoreum. Have you ever heard that term before, castoreum?
No.
Castoreum is a form of artificial flavoring. It's used in artificial vanilla, et cetera. And castoreum comes from the it's a sac, a glandular sac in the anus of beavers. They're actually putting that into food, beaver butt gland juice. I'm not making this stuff up. Look up castoreum. Wow. And just a couple more of these. Honor traditional combinations. The pairing of beans and rice, of corn and beans, and whole grains and vegetables. These combinations that appear across cultures exist because they work, providing complete proteins and complementary nutrients. Traditional wisdom about food combinations often reflects deep biochemical logic. Now, I must give one word of caution here. The corn, it talks about corn and beans.
Beans, uh-huh.
The corn that many of us are consuming these days is contaminated. It was developed as a genetically modified organism by a company in San Diego, California called Epicyte, E-P-I-C-Y-T-E. I want everyone to look this up and confirm I do not make stuff up. Epicyte was designed from antibodies against men's sperm. The anti-sperm Epicyte gene is designed to sterilize the people who consume it. Trust me, we do not want to eat any corn that's not certified organic and certified non-GMO. That sounds crazy, but doggone it, that is the world we're living in.
Now, Brother Keaty, the first pairing that you mentioned here, because you touched on the corn and beans, but that first pairing, which is rice and beans. Now, from what I understand, certain rice is not good. What type of rice would you recommend to mix with beans in your meals?
The best rice, in my mind, is black rice. It's very popular in Asia. It's also popular in other parts of the world. The Ghanaians make a wonderful red rice. I've had it. It is wonderfully dense in protein and nutritious, etc. The worst rice of all is the processed white rice. They've removed the bran. They remove the critical components and nutrients that make the rice even palatable at all. White rice is almost pure starch.
Mm. So you said black rice. Is there any other ones that maybe you could, we could get it like a
wild rice is good. Wild rice is more like a grass than it is rice, but it's still eaten the same way. Wild rice, black rice, brown rice is tolerable. Brown rice is tolerable, but it's almost white rice.
Okay.
So if we can avoid brown rice, we want to do that best we can. But once you tasted black rice, or what they say, once you've gone black, you'll never go back. Fast periodically. This is a very important point. Two more points. Fast periodically. Every tradition includes periods of fasting or restricted eating. Modern science reveals why fasting activates autophagy, a word most of us don't know. It's going to be one of the most important words you do know after reading The Conscious Roots, which fasting activates autophagy, the cellular cleanup process that removes damaged components. It shifts gene expression towards longevity pathways. It gives the digestive system rest to repair. Time-restricted eating means intermittent fasting, consuming your day's food within a 6 to 8 or even 12-hour window, a.k.a. intermittent fasting, provides many of these benefits while remaining sustainable. I've been intermittent fasting, what's called an 18-6. 18 hours of the day I do not eat. I confine all of my eating to 6-hour period from noon until 6 p.m. And that what that does allow my body to do is the last 2 hours of not eating, my body is in full autophagy. And that means every day I get a good cleaning on the cellular level, down to the mitochondria. This is a remarkable advantage. And one of the reasons people, I tease myself about it, people are always saying, Keaty, are you really doing 750 to 900 push-ups every day in three sets? I say, yes, that's what I do. It's because I have discovered this remarkable power to longevity and superhuman performance. And I had my 70th birthday last fall, so we're on track. So the last point, eat in community. The nervous system regulation that occurs when we eat with others, the slowing down, the gratitude, the conversation, this affects digestion and nutrient absorption. Food consumed in stress or in isolation is not processed the same way as food consumed in peace and connection. And if that don't make you two brothers hungry and want to dine with our listening audience today and with your brother, Chef Keaty, I don't know what will.
If I may, it's important that y'all brought this up, right? And it ended in community in towards the question that, you know, that I was thinking, you know, based off of, I guess, the chapter, looking at chapter. And there's a lot of points in chapter 8 that I, yeah, but it's too, but in relationship to the food and even eating in community, what we're, what came to mind was we need to have sovereign food, what they call it, food sovereignty.
That's right.
In order to be able to eat at the right season, in order to be able to not eat biogenetic food, we have to be assured that the food that is growing is for the community itself, so that the community can be able to be in community around, as you say, doing all, reinforcing this, that the fasting, reinforcing, you know, the growth of the right food. And it brings me to this, the part in that chapter 8 about engaging in dialogue that struck me, you know, because to be in community, you must be engaged in dialogue. Right.
That's right.
And you know, and I guess I'm asking, and I pulled this out. Overstanding is refined through dialogue with others, particularly those who see differently than you do. Not an argument aimed at winning, but a genuine exchange aimed at mutual learning. And I want you to build in that, if you don't mind, especially as it relates to trauma. Where we earlier began, because isn't that we're talking about our healing process, and that is with each other and building community.
That's right.
Why is it important, do you see, to have to that you engage this thought of engaging in dialogue? Why is that important?
Well, you mentioned it's about overstanding. The Rasta community from which I emerged, it makes a distinction between understanding. I don't want you to understand anything. I want you to stand over that bit of knowledge and be the master of it. That's very, very important. Overstanding versus understanding. So once we come to this point that we have shifted our way of thinking, and that's difficult to do when using the language of oppression. We're using our oppressors' languages. And, you know, the Spanish, the French, the English that we speak most commonly is detrimental to us on a cellular level. So this reminds me why when I'm doing my morning talk radio show, I have to periodically stop and get this mucus out of my body, because that's the poison coming out as we say these poisonous terminology and language that they use. But I know that's a little bit off-handed, but this thing. Then you mentioned something that brought me in my mind to the next book, which followed Conscious Roots, that book entitled Biocolonialism, the Technocratic War on African Fertility and Food. Now, we have to acknowledge these technocrats, Bill Gates, Melinda Gates Foundation. They get a whole chapter in this book, because this book begins really with an investigation. I'm asking myself the question, what are Bill Gates and Melinda Gates up to that makes people in East Africa especially so hostile to their presence there. And that literally became a whole book. This book is devastating. It's absolutely devastating. In fact, this is the fastest selling book that I've produced, I think, maybe in years, The Technocratic War on African Fertility and Food. And as we are primarily the victims of them, we've got to come up with a solution. When we look at what Melinda Gates Foundation was doing, it's worse than we could imagine. They have been experimenting on African women, nothing new to this planet, with an injectable form of Depo Provera. And when they began deploying and testing this, they began in Detroit. About 1,700 women in Detroit, childbearing age women, were experimented on with this new injectable form of Depo Provera. And when we understand what was going on there, it is absolutely awesome. The name of the chemical is actually DMPA. So I can't think of what that stands for right now, but I'll have it in my mind the next time we get together. But what's happening is this. This injectable form of Depo Provera is causing women's bone density, osteoporosis, their bone density to lose its mass. And the bones happen to have been storing, among many things, the excess lead that was in a woman's body. Yes, the excess lead is stored in the bones, and this is causing the bones to osteoporosis, to leach, and they're dumping the lead into the women's bloodstream, and it is said to raise the blood level by blood lead level by 18%. And numerous voices, and I cite them in here, say there is no safe level of lead in the blood. Now, here's another thing. When a woman, many times a woman wants to start taking this injectable Depo Provera right after she has had a baby. And guess what she's doing for the next 6 months? She's nursing. She's supposed to be nursing that baby on breast milk. Well, guess what? The lead goes into the breast milk. They have found a way to dumb down a whole generation of children. This started in America in Detroit, but it's now 74 million women around the world are using this injectable Depo Provera. It's very prevalent in India. And so that's one of many reasons why people so hate the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And the more I look into it, the more I can see that they're not only doing sinister things, population control things, but they're so accepted by African leaders and African governors. They can't wait to have their photograph taken with Bill Gates and to cooperate with his organization so that they'll get some money off of it. It makes me want to holler and throw up both my hands.
You know, Elliot, you know, and I'm glad you brought this up, Brother Keedy, in relationship to the, you know, the thing continuous about health and in relationship to dialogue, because just recently a report came out about how Burkina Faso just made an agreement, engaged in an agreement with the United States.
That's right.
Of $147 million health agreement. Now, I mean, it's important for us to be in dialogue based off of the information that you're saying in relationship to health, because we're looking at, especially from that context of Pan-Africanism, we're looking at places like Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger. And I see that there's other countries, too, that are, I think God has taken some agreement in relationship to health. So
Kenya's one of the worst as well.
Yeah, we need to be in dialogue in order to be clear, or if they are not aware, to be aware. And that's, and I think that that's important. So in relationship to what you bring up, I just thought that as you built on that, it was important to bring that in, because that's a new development that some of us are leery at what it means, but you're bringing in context of how they're talking, bringing these things, technological things of health to African people, like they're doing us a favor, where it can be really harmful.
You're absolutely right. And we have to put up a front. We have to get engaged in a battle. We need a vanguard. I'm asking your listeners to join us. Join the vanguard. First of all, I encourage you, do get the book. It's called Biocolonialism, and you can get the book or any of my 64 books up at the Conscious. It's called Conscious Rasta Press. ConsciousRastaPress.com. You can go there. You'll see a long, long list of my books. I've been putting up my audio books all day today, and I've got about maybe 30 to 35 of my audio books up. I'll have the rest of them up here by the end of the day. But we're going to raise ourselves up from the dead weight that we have become. Our ancestors worked so hard. The elders who are still amongst us of the baby boom generation, they're going out now. They're fading out. In fact, we're now seeing Generation X. They're rushing to early grave. And that's unacceptable. We're going to do a better job. We are going to do what is required of us because we stand upon the shoulders of these giants who work so hard to bring us this far.
We're going to take a brief break. And when we come back, we're going to continue the discussion. You can get involved too by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Our guest this evening, Pan-African researcher, broadcast journalist, and author, Brother Kiti, the Conscious Rasta Owadu. The Conscious Roots, Growth, Heritage, and the Biology of Being is one of the many books that we're going to discuss this evening. We'll transition into some other topics with Brother Kiti, and you can join the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Time for an awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Escape the digital plantation. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, Abibitumi.tv.com, Abibitumi.store are here for you. You are ready to be free of non-African social media. Don't run from danger, run to safety. Abibitumi.com is here for you. You are ready to be free of digital plantations to control your own products. Abibitumi.store is here for you. ABIBITUMI, Black Power, ABIBITUMI. The only word you need to know to join your global Kometsu Black family, to join your interconnected Kometsu Black communities. Escape the digital plantation now. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, at bbtumitv.com, at bbtumi.store. We are here for you. Escape the digital plantation.
It does not profit black people or poor people anything to have the vote and not be able to select the candidates who they want to choose. Now, how can you choose between Lyndon Johnson, Nixon, Agnew, Wallace, and Humphrey? There is no choice. Evil is evil. There's nothing in between that. I think the vote can only be used as a tool of organization. We can only use the vote to organize our people. Now, to really believe that we can put someone in office and that these people would be responsive to our needs is naive, politically naive. Because even if one of the black candidates who ran for office was to take the office of president, then black people must be prepared to fight against that person. Why? Because, you see, the system mandates the action of the individual. The individual does not determine how this country will function. This country works off the military-industrial complex, which means that it's profitable to wage war. And unless you, you know, devise another plan, another scheme to sustain, to boost this economy, then it's going to be necessary to wage war. Whether, you know, a black individual is in office or a white individual is in office. Well, so we're talking about a complete a change in system.
The system is rotten to the core. That's why every time we have had a presidential election, whether it's white or black, you always have to choose between the lesser of two evils. So you either vote for Satan or the devil, and you catch hell with either one.
This included comedians, comics, trumpet players, baseball players. Show me in the white community where a comedian is a white leader. Show me in the white community where a singer is a white leader, or a dancer or a trumpet player is a white leader. These aren't leaders. These are puppets and clowns that have been set up over the white community and over the black community by the white community and have been made celebrities and usually say exactly what they know that the white man wants to hear.
One black man believes in violence, one believes in integration, one believes that one day after we all marry white women, we'll all be a light brown color and there'll be no problem. One believes that if we get enough politics and education, we can take over the country and be the mayor and the president. One believes, such as I, that separating on some land will solve it. Cleaning up our own neighborhoods, respecting our own women, and doing something for ourselves and quit begging white people. This is our solution.
You know, we really are being colonized. In a colony, the education is controlled from outside. The politics is controlled from outside. The economics is controlled from outside. The police in a colony are not there to serve and to protect, but there to keep the colonized ones from disturbing the status quo. The question is, do we want to continue to live as a colony, or do we want to be like the original 13 colonies and decide that we've had enough? Let's break from a colonial past and let's seek freedom.
Time for an Awakening is a proud part of the Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent black digital and podcasting platform.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 7:13 on this Sunday edition of Time for an Awakening. Our guest this evening in conversation, Pan-African researcher, broadcast journalist, and author. Brother Kidi Owadu is with us this evening. The book, The Conscious Roots, is one of the topics of discussion this evening. We're going to divert into other topics also with our guests this evening. And you can join the conversation, too, by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Brother Kidi, before we left, let me go back to chapter 5 in your book, The Origin of Echoes. And on page 77, you got a passage here on why origin matters now. And let me read a couple paragraphs because I want you to kind of go into that for our listeners. Under identity and mental health, the psychological impact of disconnection from cultural roots cannot be overstated. Study after study shows that people with strong cultural identity, with knowledge of their heritage, with connection to ancestral traditions, show better mental health outcomes, higher resilience to stress, stronger sense of purpose, and greater overall well-being. Conversely, cultural alienation correlates with depression, anxiety, substance abuse, various forms of self-destructive behavior. When people do not know where they come from, when they have been taught their origins are shameful, when they lack cultural anchoring, they are more vulnerable to every form of psychological distress. Brother Kidi, go into that for us, because we seem to be, as a people, a lot of narratives are always thrown out there for our people. And a lot of those narratives sometimes don't come from us, because there's a lot of covert activity going on among black folks. So you have different schools of thought out here now about our people coming from slaves. Our origin starts here in the United States, and it's no connection with the continent. Talk about how dangerous that is in relation to what you're saying here in the book, that that narrative is not productive, but very much counterproductive.
Yeah, when we're talking about African descendants of slaves, or the original slave, I can't remember, what was the acronym of the group? ADS or something?
Yes.
And then you have your fundamental Black Americans. If we look at the organizers, the leaders of those organs, they're pathological. And I'm not going to go too much deeper in it, because time for an awakening is not time for start some beef, but they're pathological. I examine their behaviors. I am an elder, and other elders have examined their behaviors. They say this is not really good for us. But it does make sense. I mean, you talked about that when they have been taught their origins, and when they come from this, they're we expand. We're free from psychological distress. We are culturally anchored, and we move forward. So who would not want these benefits? But we have to make a deliberate effort to connect deeply to our cultural roots, our ancestral roots. If, as you and I have done that, and I'm very proud that what I found out when I searched into the soil of our collective being and looked to what those roots were tapped into, I found 5,000 years of glorious history, more than 5,000. But we take it back to Imhotep, who was the third physician known in world history. And there were Plessy before him, and there was another one, a woman whose name I can't remember, but I did write it about in my book, Standard Omission, The Greco-Roman Origins of Medical Science is African Science. So once we understand what's on the other side of those roots, I mean, who in their right mind would want to say my history began in 1609 when a slave ship dumped some of my ancestors on the shores of Virginia? That's kind of crazy talk.
Yeah, I just wanted you to kind of express how that relates to some of the things that you assert in the book, not necessarily to get off into any personalities, because to me that really doesn't matter. I'm just talking about
the
argument of how that really is counterproductive when you say that when anybody says that our people's history and origin starts here in the United States or in the islands.
Or when they say I ain't no African, that's an absurd statement to me. Okay. I make me want to blink, rub my eyes and say, doggone it, you sure look like an African to me. Can you imagine a person who's very obviously of Chinese heritage saying, I ain't no Chinese? No, they would never say that because they see China as a power, a respected power on this planet that can stand down anyone who would oppose China. So ultimately, 1.765 billion people on this planet are of African ancestry. I worked hard to trace us all over the planet. And I published my studies in a finding in a book that connects us. It talks about the African future. And when we look at how many Africans there are around the planet, South America, Brazil, Colombia, Haiti, England, France, United States, Canada, are all across the CARICOM. There's too many of us for us to be acting as if we'll never gain sovereign power. I do believe that we will gain sovereign power, but it will not be by default. Ain't nobody going to give it to us. What did Ken Bridges say about reparations? We don't have to ask anybody for permission. We don't have to beg anybody for it. All we have to do is respect ourselves and respect others like us, and then we will get reparations for ourselves from our own resources. Praise be the eternal name of Ken Bridges.
If I may, you know, because again, still in chapter 8 of your book, when, you know, you raised the point, and it goes to the question that you raised, Elliot, cultivating overstanding practical practices, study deeply, not broadly. What did you mean by that?
Well, that's a good question. And on page 120, I have a list. And it says, Babylon depends on us not thinking critically. It requires us to accept official narratives. And therefore, the system is designed to instill their approved beliefs rather than develop our capacity for independent thought. So I then began with a series of questions we should always ask. Critical thinking begins with these questions. Who is telling me this? What do they gain from my believing it? What evidence supports this claim? What evidence contradicts it? What alternative explanations exist? What assumptions underlie this argument? Whose voices are absent from this narrative? Who benefits from this being accepted as truth? So when we go through that series of questions about something that is questionable, and I use this kind of logical step-by-step pattern of looking at virtually everything that comes across my desk, because there's a lot of BS that comes across all of our desks, and it even is coming from people who look just like me are out here selling lies and distortions because they want the same thing the opposition wants. They want control over us. And so we're not going to yield that control. So we're going to step through this series of logic, in-depth questioning. And I think that this logic pattern that emerges at the end of this list of questions is where we should therefore make a stance and then act upon what we have truly come to understand, overstand.
And you know, Elliot, in what Brother Keedy was raising, because at the end of it, he said, critical thinking is the antidote for the deliberate cultivation of intellectual independence.
And that's right.
You know, I just thought that was profound in relationship to building community, recognizing at the cellular level what is necessary that we need to inject, and that is information and food, right?
That's right.
Deal with this trauma.
Very good point. I'm glad you put that last statement on it. Sometimes, you know, I love to write, and sometimes I get caught up in my own words. and it will lead me to a different tangent, but you snapped it right back there. That was the really the closing statement of that long list of questions. I'm glad you pointed that out.
Yeah, Brother Keedy, I'm going to shift gears a little bit in reference to what you talked about or what you said that you wanted to kind of introduce when we first started the program, because it's things happening rapidly now. And I believe, similar to you, that these things are supposed to happen in its time. We see that the system that we live under is putting a full court press on, to use a basketball term, or an all out assault on world cultures. In the past month, we've seen this government go into Venezuela, depose a sovereign leader, say he was a drug dealer, and bring him to the United States and jail him. We see that it is an all-out assault on Cuba, a nation that has been under serious embargoes for over 60 years, and that sends medical teams all around the world to help when natural disasters happen, when global pandemics happen, or illnesses break out worldwide. Those doctors are known worldwide. This country now is not only a full court press to destroy their government, but to destroy their medical system, putting tariffs or whatever against nations that deal with Cuban doctors. And now we see what has happened this past weekend with a concerted assault on Iran by the United States and Israel.
And the Zionist Christian Alliance.
Yes. And what I want to say is, see, that makes what you're writing in the book about the conscious roots and how our people has to come back to things that made us strong as a people, because the people that runs these systems of white supremacy are doing similar things. They won't be as successful because I don't believe it's righteously based. But let me play this clip. I played it last week for our listeners. Let me play this clip to what one of the government officials here stated in Europe a couple of weeks ago at a forum of other European nations, what he stated, and we're familiar with this cabinet person. But let me play this clip of what he said. Uh-oh, I think I got it here. Hold on a second. Maybe I don't. Oh. Yep, Richard, I thought I had it. I don't have it right now. This thing is it's freezing up. Yeah, it did. Let me see something here. Let me try it again. Hold on a second, Brother Keedy. I don't want to lose this. If I can get this right. No, it's not coming through for some odd reason.
I think I have one, and I don't know. It's at the, didn't come up. Mine didn't come up either. That's interesting. Let me see.
No, I can't seem to get it for some reason. It's not popping up. Yeah, it's not. I don't think it's going to come through. But
the alliance that we want is one that is not paralyzed into inaction by fear. Fear of climate change, fear of war, fear of technology. Instead, we want an alliance that boldly races into the future. And the only fear we have is the fear of the shame of not leaving our nations prouder, stronger, and wealthier for our children. An alliance ready to defend our people, to safeguard our interests and to preserve the freedom of action that allows us to shape our own destiny, not one that exists to operate a global welfare state and atone for the purported sins of past generations. An alliance that does not allow its power to be outsourced, constrained, or subordinated to systems beyond its control. One that does not depend on others for the critical necessities of its national life. And one that does not maintain the polite pretense that our way of life is just one among many and that asks for permission before it acts. And above all, an alliance based on the recognition that we, the West, have inherited together, what we have inherited together is something that is unique and distinctive and irreplaceable. Because this, after all, is the very foundation of the transatlantic bond.
Now, that was this guy, Marco Rubio, speaking to European nations in reference to basically what is going on now. Now, he was talking about the West, and he was talking about the United States and Europe. And believe me, he wasn't talking about black children, about them passing down these Western values and preserving them for our children, which he stated. So when you hear these people saying this, see, our people got to realize it's important for us to, what you're writing in this book, Brother Keedy, about us recapturing our cultural roots to be able to arm ourselves and our children to fight this spiritual battle is necessary. Because these people are coalescing around one another. They're doing it as we speak. But the leadership here that we have among black people is void of the proper tools to fight this battle.
And if I can, because you played that clip, and Brother Keedy, in your book on page 124, when you say beyond linear thinking, Western tends towards linear. A causes B, B causes C. But then you go on and say, and this goes to, again, the root of the biology of being, where you say in another paragraph, you cannot understand ecology with linear thinking. Pulling one thread affects the entire web. You cannot understand society with linear thinking. Economic policy affects health, affects education, affects crime, affects family structure, and endless feedback loops. You cannot understand individual psychology with linear thinking. Body affects mind, affects emotion, affects behavior, affects body in continuous cycles. Now, it seems to me, when we connect it to trauma, when we connect it to epigenetics, when we connect it to, I guess, the reason why this book, among other books that you have printed, The Conscious Roots, Growth, Heritage, and the Biology of Being, is because the West has been dealing with linear thinking. And what you raised, Elliot, we could see it in a geopolitical sense. You know, Venezuela affects Cuba, affects Iran. You know, this is a linear thinking, and it has an impact on the devastation of social structures and the planet as it's constructed. So I have to ask it to ask a question, and hopefully you don't mind. Is that what you had in mind when you were developing this section?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely had that in mind, because there is this disconnect. I like to say that thing you do, it ain't my own. And that is to say, you have to understand, there are people who will think differently from you. When you were playing that quote from Marco de Rubio or Marco Polo, whatever his name is, I was reminded, as I'm listening to it, I'm saying, I'm feeling uncomfortable with this. And then you told me who it was, Marco Rubio. And I said, okay, that's why I felt so uncomfortable. It reminded me, what came to mind was Dr. Marimba Ani's breakthrough book for understanding Urugu, the incomplete being. They think they're so clever. They think they're on the front edge of everything. They think they are leading the world, But you and I stand aside as an African elder, hopefully a wise and esteemed African elder, and I can't help but say that thing you do, it ain't my own. Can we coexist on this planet? And I think we can see by the behavior of Marco Rubio and his boss and a whole bunch of other people around them that think like them and speak like them, it's going to be very increasingly difficult to coexist with them on this beautiful pearl water covered planet that we know as our Mother Earth. So at a certain point, this book and other books that I'm writing challenge the conscious African to stand up. The only thing greater you can identify is Mother Earth, which contains all of us. We are cells within her temple, and it is time some of us must prepare to sacrifice our convenience to save our great Mother Earth.
Brother Keedy, let me ask you. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I didn't want to cut you.
It ain't going to be easy.
I know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Let me ask you a question based on the writing of this book and the other book that you spoke about in the beginning of the program. How can we, and I'm talking about us as a collective, do a better job now to bringing our younger generation to understand the power that we have as a people? Now, let me preface by saying this, and this is just my opinion. If you look at the past 50 years or 60 years, for example, during that period that they called the Black Power or Civil Rights Movement, most of the people involved in that were the quote-unquote movers and shakers, they were young people. They were young. I mean, we see them now, some of them murdered, like King and Malcolm. Some of them just passing away, like Jackson and Jameel El-Amin, which was H. Rap Brown. But during that period, they were all young men and women in their 20s and 30s. Mm-hmm. And now the system that we live under has been successful to a degree of indoctrinating the younger generation of Black people to have mm-hmm. their minds going towards other things, entertainment, sports, things of that nature. Those things are prominent in some young people's minds. How can we do a better job to counteract this insidious type of propaganda that seems to be infiltrating the minds of some of our youth?
Well, I did mention that I had a new book that just coming out today, believe it or not. And the new book is entitled S.T. is the acronym, Steamships. So in Steamships, we're dealing with education. With STEM, we're talking about science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. Mm-hmm. But that is only a technical or mechanical idea. So, of course, it was easy for us to add arts to that. So STEAM then became, or STEM became STEAM. In my new book, I articulate that for proper education of African children, the acronym should be STEAMSHIPS. That stands for science, technology, engineering, arts, mathematics, spirituality, holistic health, innovation, prosperity, and sustainability. That is the Steamships acronym. I'm putting this in the hands of my education scholars that I do know, a number of them, Marcus Klein, Chike Okua, mm-hmm. and Deborah Watkins, and a number of others. I'm going to put the book in their hands, and I'm going to say, is this book something you can use? I'm pretty sure they're going to be very, very proud of me when I present Steamships to each and every one of them. I've presented this acronym many times before. I first developed this acronym back during the COVID period, which was a time when many of us were reacting as if our very existence depended upon it. And so I said, let me come up with something that people can take serious. I think that the Steamships acronym is right on point.
Those things can be successful, and they will be successful when we take control of educating our youth. And
I say,
some of our people think that that's a daunting task, but we did it before. When we came out of that period of enslavement, we took control of educating our youth.
And changed the whole dynamics of education for young people in this country, too.
Exactly. So it should, to me, and I'm just looking at it, it should be simpler for us to do it now because we have the advent of computers, electricity, mass media. At that time when we did it, none of those things existed. So it should be easier for us to do it now. But we have to take control of the education of our youth. It's not going to happen if we don't.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And as you say, the tools, the technology, they're easier to access than ever before. However, the internal resistance to change is unfortunately grown correspondingly. It's actually been cultivated to be stronger than our tendency towards change and transformation, even though the change and transformation makes every bit of sense. But the yoke of the oppression, the noose around our neck, gets tighter and tighter as you and I make deliberate moves toward liberation and sustaining that sovereignty that we know we deserve, and we must earn it. We must earn our sovereignty.
Richard?
It just, as y'all are building on that, you know, I'm looking at the section in the book, The Conscious Roots, and where the African model, concentric circles of belonging, and it's making me think in this last paragraph, you know, as I'm trying to formulate as a question or to, for you to build on, where it says, rebuilding community means reconstructing. And I guess your steamship is a part of that process of reconstructing these circles, not identically to pre-colonial form, which is impossible, but in ways that honor the principle of nested belonging, mutual obligation, and recognition that we exist through rather than despite our connections. Is this, when we're talking about identifying young people with from a community aspect, developing young people from the perspective of belonging and being able to, you know, I think in the last part of steamship, it was about sustainability, you know, being able to have them foresee in the now and in the future that the sustainability, regardless of a transhuman society, a MGO society that is being developed. Is that the reason why you see this new form of African formation so necessary?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And without the existence and the strength of these concentric circles, and again, concentric circles means there's a circle within a circle without a circle, there's another circle slightly off axis, and they join together, is that through these concentric circles, we know our strength, but our children are becoming isolated. We've been taught individualism. Instead of building a concentric circle like you and I did when we were younger, our children are at home with the video game, building concentric circles with people they may not even know. I was in a home about a year ago and observed the behavior of their teenage son in the home. And he spent all of his time in video games playing with people that he may or may not have seen them just a couple of hours earlier in school. I don't think he really did, but it was interesting how they're so isolated now. Whereas in my time, I remember at that age, we would be out in the neighborhood. We'd be riding our bikes together, playing football or baseball or whatever was in season together. We would be engaging in life affirming activity, healthy activities. But now it's been displaced by social media, and video games. And I'm sure here on Time for an Awakening, you've spoken about the damage social media is doing to the minds and to the spirits of our young people.
Hey, Elliot, I don't know, Brother Keedy, we had a frightening thing, well, at least for me. What is that, last week when we got those two dumps of snow? And usually to the point, to your, you know, as far as young people and isolation and individualism. At one point, I thought I heard, you know, because I remember it was a moment when snow like this happened, I guess, in my youth. You would, you know, everybody would be outside. Mm-hmm. You had a trash can top or you had a cardboard, you know, two or three people pushing on this snow. And it just so happened I heard a noise. I thought there was children outside, and the reason why I'm bringing this up, because it was surprising to me in this moment, I rarely see children outside. And then I go to the door and there's nobody out there. You know, no, you know, so it feeds to your point of how the society, that the technological society that is being created is creating so much of this individualism, so much of our interface with the technology, whether it's social media or whether it's gaming, whether it's, you know, this whole thing of virtual reality. These are things that take away from a biological perspective that human connection. Because if I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong, it's not just our communication. There is a bioelectrical relationship that occurs when we're engaging with each other in close proximity because we are bioelectrical entities.
That's right. And conversely, when we are not engaging with each other, that same biological, bioelectrical connection then becomes connected to inanimate objects, unless we consider the technology to be animated, to be living. I hope we haven't sunk that low, but it's obvious we're moving in the wrong direction as we are sacrificing more and more of our children to this technocratic element known as social media, the TikToking of a generation. I see this as extremely dangerous.
Wow. You know,
we can do better, but we got to have a plan. If you want to get from your point to somewhere across town, you have to map it out. You have to have a plan to get there, and then you have to stick to that plan. Unfortunately, a lot of our people are just drifting. You can tell by the way they eat.
And leadership is key in that, Brother Keedy. Having leadership to move the people to things that they wouldn't do and areas that they wouldn't normally go is strong leadership that moves the people to do things extraordinary. And the times call for it now. You know, it's just distressing to me that we see things happening now and we hear people talk about this particular system that's in place now and the faces on this particular iteration of this system that we're dealing with and how they see clearly that these people are evil. And I'm talking about this administration that's in now. But when they start these unjust conflicts and wars, some of our children are called in the front lines and have weapons in their hands to defend this type of immoral behavior. And nothing is said in reference to it by people that look like us that are in leadership. They should be some of the first that says, you know, especially if they're the moral conscience of this country, that this is wrong. I've seen that down in that Caribbean theater, the one death that they acknowledged that has been recorded is a young black 21-year-old young man. Supposedly he fell off the ship. It's under investigation. All of that stuff is sketchy as far as I'm concerned. But he does. He did lose his life. We talked about that. It was in a published report. So, you know, I don't want to see any of our children lose their lives for this type of imperialist aggression that's happening worldwide. But, you know, I'm just one voice crying in the wilderness, so to speak. But we need other voices. And I'm talking about ones in leadership. I'm not talking about you, Brother Keady, as a broadcast journalist, because I know that you're going to do what you need to do. Your work speaks for itself. The books that you put out, the information that you discuss. But some of these folks that our people put their trust in, that they vote for, that supposedly are supposed to lead the community in positive directions, they're not saying anything in reference to this. And to me, that's dangerous.
Mm-hmm. And we've got to do a better job of letting our people know we have thought out the problem. Some of us are articulated the problem. People say, hey, I'm tired of hearing about that problem. Give me real, workable, tangible solutions that I can implement with the resources I already have in hand. So there are many things that we recommend doing, such as reclaiming our biological wisdom, what I call in the conclusion chapter, mm-hmm. the temple within. Reclaim that biological wisdom. How do we reclaim biological wisdom? We've got to talk to ourselves. We got to talk to our DNA. And how do we talk to our DNA? Through the food. Reclaiming our biological wisdom. Detoxify. So the food isn't all, their ears aren't crammed, they can't hear, where they're so stressed out, they can't understand. Detoxify, clean it out. The echoes of origin. Knowing our gold. Knowing our gold. Now, we frequently talk, I know I'm in many conversations, that talk about the sovereignty of natural resources and Africans reclaiming their gold, whether it be gold in Burkina Faso or Mali, the gold of Ghana, gold all over the continent. But we've got to not just talk about reclaiming that gold, we really got to do it. Now, I managed to sneak out another book. I've talked about the biology of the technocrat, the biocolonialism, and we talked about the conscious roots. But here's another book. I hope you can see this. This book is called Awakening the Crown.
Mm-hmm.
Unlock Your Full Potential. This guide combines modern science with ancestral wisdom to regenerate your cells, clear your mind, and achieve power and youthful aging. Designing your body from the cells up for power, clarity, and youthful aging. So once we recover this gold, we reclaim the crown. We're crowning ourselves. We have the power ultimately to crown ourselves or empower ourselves. And doggone it, I'm going to be so bold as to give us a blueprint to do so. But here's the thing, brothers. As you very well know, I can write these books till I'm blue in the face. 64 books, I could write another 16 books within a year. But if people will refuse to read, or if they'll refuse to specifically read this book that I am writing, then all of this detailed plotting and planning goes to nothing. I am studying game theory on the highest level possible, because I believe that's what's running the world these days, game theory. It's a big chessboard. And if I'm going to be in someone else's chess game, let me learn how to play it better than they know how.
When you were reading those solutions at the end, the conclusions,
mm-hmm.
you got to knowing the goal, the other one mm-hmm. that comes after them. Talk a little bit about that, the psychology of liberation.
Because yeah, breaking mental chains.
That's where we are right now. Go ahead.
That's where we are as a group. You're absolutely right. And this is, for me, it's not hard. But obviously, the world is not me. Our community is not me alone. And if we're looking at what our community is going through, let's just use the health status of our community as a point of analysis. And the health status of African people in America is worse than we could ever imagine. Obesity, overweight, which is the cause of some 32 different medical conditions, has overwhelmingly overtaken both men and women in this country. It's now overtaking our children. We're having 7% or 9% of children, I think, under age 7 are now classified as obese. That's crazy. And in our grandparents' day and age, obesity was very rare. Cancer, that's another example. I put out a book called A Year Against Cancer not too long ago. In ancient Egypt, cancer was first identified, and now they can go back and examine the mummified remains and find out the incidence of cancer in that society. According to the best evidence that I've been able to find, in ancient Egypt, cancer diagnosis at death was one of every 400 people. That's a 0.25% incidence rate of cancer in that society. Fast forward to the year 1900. Now we have Western medicine is coming into many of our lives. In 1900, the rate of death of cancer at death was one of every 24 people. A century later, in the year 2000, the rate of cancer at death was one of every six people. 18 years later, in 2018, it was one of every three people. Today, the rate of cancer is two of every five people at death will have been diagnosed with cancer in their lifetime. Quite simply, the numbers are overwhelmingly moving in the opposite direction. It's an exponential curve. So we got to come back and have some very basic understandings about what causes cancer, how do I deal with cancer, et cetera. If we're not prepared to go in deep and answer those questions, we're unfortunately going to be caught up in something that we don't understand. What did Stevie Wonder say? When you believe in things that you don't understand,
you suffer.
Then you suffer. Superstition ain't the way.
You know, listen, spend a little time before you leave us, Brother Keedy. You wrote a book years ago, Living Superfoods. And during the COVID outbreak, I didn't take that shot. I was on a regimen of vitamin D, vitamin C, garlic. I took a lot of different things, and that helped me get through it. I never caught COVID. I never took the shot. And to this day, I just stayed on it. I take it all the time. Just tell me some things that our people can do to kind of change things. Now, in my case, my particular case, because, you know, when I was taking that vitamin D every day and the garlic and the vitamin C and a few other things, some of the other things I stopped, but I still take the vitamin D, the garlic, and the vitamin C. Can you take too much of that? Is it good to maybe have a regimen? Will you take it every day? Just talk about some of the things that are good for our people to kind of start implementing in their lives every day.
Mm-hmm. Well, ultimately, it's not the supplementation. It is the original form of the food that you're eating, such as in garlic. Garlic contains allicin, and we do know that fresh, raw garlic is the best source of allicin that would strengthen our immune system. Vitamin C, or vitamin C, as they say, is best obtained through eating limes, lemons, grapefruit, apples, oranges, fresh fruits and vegetables, preferably fresh and organic. So we want to get the superfoods in. Superfoods, specifically the foods that give us the most dense spectrum of critical nutrients needed for life, but also they're presented live, they're presented in concentrated form of these supplements. So I consume a lot of different superfoods, and I encourage to get, you know, my series of books. I think I have about at least 8 books or 10 or 12 books out with superfoods in the title: Superfood Longevity, Superfood Research, Superfood Recipes Volume 1, 2, and 3, as well as I took a soul food book and turned that into a superfood book by Transforming Soul Food is the name of that book. So superfoods are A+. So we're talking about a scale of nutrition, the worst of the worst, junk food, The second worst, fast foods. The third worst, the standard American diet. Fourth worst, the modified standard American diet. We go up, up, up the hierarchy until we're getting into class of raw, 80-20 raw, vegan. And then we go into detoxification, nutrition, superfoods. And then the top of the line of everything, it's what's called orthomolecular medicine, which means correct for the molecule, for the cell. That's the best healing we can do. And that's pretty much all raw, fresh juices. And that, in my opinion, is how I would deal with any serious morbid disease. If I were diagnosed with cancer, I'd say, oh, let me go into my medicine, my kitchen, my laboratory, and make orthomolecular medicine to heal this, get my body right, and then ask the question, what allowed my body to get off track in the first place? We got to answer that question.
So
now, as a clinical nutritionist, I deal with people who are dealing with, hey, people are out here, they're on dialysis machines. Am I correct?
Mm-hmm.
They got diabetes, cardiovascular disease, atherosclerosis, all clogged up. Some people, a lot of people took the jabs, multiple of them. Now I'm getting them 2-3 years later, and they've got aneuploidosis. They've got thrombosis. One of our dear friends at age 48 died just a few weeks ago of a big, huge, long mass in his blood vessels that was quite likely a consequence of what it's said to be the cause of the jabs, thrombosis, clogged arteries. So we're not going to be sacrificing Gen X because a few people bought into that whole hype and scam about the pandemic. It was a scam. And we know that definitively now.
Brother Kitty, you mentioned about the cancers and all earlier, a few minutes ago when you started talking. And if you, and as you're well aware, prostate and colon cancer is hitting the black community hard. Several friends of mine has developed prostate cancer. Talk about some of the things that are preventative that our people can start. If you don't have those things, if they don't, number one, I think you, just me as a novice, I think you have to find out if they run in your family. If they run in your family.
No.
Go ahead.
No, that's a lie. They want to say it's genetics. But wait, prostate cancer shows up in our family lineage just about 3 or 4 generations ago. That's not how evolution works. I've studied evolution all throughout my scientific career, and evolution does not work that fast. But family habits carry on from generation to generation. And if you're looking at specifically about this diagnosis they call prostate cancer, I call it the cheese disease. And then one would ask, if a person is diagnosed with cancer, that's the first time I ask them. First question I ask them, do you consume a lot of dairy? And I find out, yes. In most cases, they say, yes, I love milk. I love ice cream. You scream. We all scream when someone brings in ice cream. They love the cheese. They love all this stuff. And then I say, did you know that some 95% of the Bantu phenotype on this planet, which is East African black people, are intolerant of lactose. They lack the lactase enzyme, which means they cannot break down the sugar lactose. 100% or almost 100% of Asians are lactose intolerant. So now you're trying to eat cheese and pizza and everything else that you see advertised on the sports commercials, and you're wondering why you're getting sick. One more point I want to make. I'm going to give you a name. Please write this name down. Dr. Richard Ablin, A-B-L-I-N. This man is attributed with discovering the prostate-specific antigen. Dr. Richard Ablin is also the author of a book, and I'm going to grab it right off my shelf right here. I keep it handy. The book is called The Great Prostate Hoax, How Big Medicine Hijacked the PSA Test and Caused a Public Health Disaster. Dr. Richard Ablin, The Great Prostate Hoax. And I tell people, how did you find out that you had prostate cancer? And inevitably, they're going to say, oh, I took the test. I say, well, why did you take the test? Who told you, who convinced you to submit yourself to a prostate-specific antigen test? And most likely, in our case, we're recommended to it by friends and friends of friends. And I say, did you know that the doctor who patented this whole PSA system, he wrote a book saying that the test is a fake. It's a phony. It's been hijacked by the pharmaceutical corporations, the medical bureaucrats, and they're holding that over us in particular because they know we're going to more likely test positive for a PSA test because we have so many free-floating antigens in our bloodstream. Because we're poor, we're exposed to more stuff out here in the world, and that makes our blood tests more positive on that BS test. Made me want to holler, throw up both my hands.
Brother Kitty, one more question before I pass it over to Richard. And it's still dealing with the prostate thing because in my business, several of the customers that come in have had either issues with their prostate, had prostate cancer, had the prostate removed. And seem like all of them that I've talked to never had any pain. They didn't know anything about any problems until after they took this PSA test that you're talking about. Now, a few of them mentioned about them having to go to the bathroom constantly at night. Talk about it from that perspective. What is causing that if it's not necessarily related to prostate cancer? What might be causing that, and what can they do to try to maybe alleviate these things before it gets to the point where they feel as though that they have to go under the knife?
Mm-hmm. Well, what they are suffering from is hyperplasia. That's different from prostate cancer. Hyperplasia means hyper, meaning too much, too fast. Plasia meaning tissue growth. So prostate hyperplasia causes their prostate to swell. It naturally is going to be swelling as we get older,
okay,
which partially accounts for why we want to get up in the middle of the night and go to the bathroom. It's called neuropia or something like that. I'll think of it in a second. But it's fairly common in older people. It's nothing so much to worry about. There are a few things we can do to modify ourselves. Right now, I'm going through a regimen controlling my peripheral neuropathy. I had idiopathic peripheral neuropathy, which means of unknown cause, my nerves and my feet would, especially when it would get cold, would get real sensitive and I would get pains. I put myself on a very strict program exactly 1 week ago, and I put myself on a program that was expected to yield positive results after 3 months. And after the first 5 days, my peripheral neuropathy dropped probably by about 20%. So I'm sticking to it. I'm very strict when I get on these routines. I'm sticking through it. But the bottom line is if you have prostate cancer, one, you need to detox. The 3-day water-only fast begins a serious set of changes inside your body. You're going to, if you've ever done it before, you'll find out you do it once. You can't wait to do it again. It's good to wait about a month before you do it again. But a 3-day water fast does so many wonderful things. You'll lose weight, but it also turns on the process of autophagy, which is your cells cleaning up the inner junk and debris. Also, a 3-day water fast is a good way of beating diabetes.
A three-day water fast.
That's a great way to start that diabetes because when you're on a 3-day water fast from the 12th hour onward, your body has your insulin sensitivity is turning back on. So that's really what diabetes is really about, an insensitivity to insulin because we're flooding our body with so much refined white sugar and all of that stuff that if we just tune in the with a 3-day water fast, not only tune in the pancreas to get things back on track and get the insulin balance, but also if someone wants to be so bold, they can turn their stem cells on and actually rebuild the beta cells of the pancreas so that they'll produce normal amounts of insulin. It's a miracle. Miracles do happen, my brother. They do happen. We got to believe in miracles. Then we have to come up with a process of using nature, the natural process, to create those miracles that we now say we do believe in.
Brother Keeley, the 3-day water fast, let me go back to that a second, because what type of water is, you know, just say if I go on a water fast, me, I always drunk. In fact, when I was young, my parents always bought spring water. So I never really was in the habit of drinking tap water. Sure, I've drank it, but we've always drunk spring water. Now, if I during the 3-day water fast, what type of water is the best to use in a 3-day water fast? And can you add maybe a little lemon or something to the water?
Or you that's a good question. You can add electrolytes in the form of lemon, lime. After 3 days, if you're going for a longer water fast, at about 5 days, I will have to boost the electrolytes in my water, put a little sea salt in, a little bit of baking soda, some celery water and lemon water in it, because after 5 days, you have a tendency to become faint from hypoglycemia, meaning too low blood sugar. So that's good. And also, the lack of electrolytes in your body, at a certain point, you're going to have irregular heartbeat and you're going to start cramping. So we do want to avoid those as we possibly can. Hey, listen, it took me 20 years to finally perfect the art of water fasting. I've done water fasting and juice fasting for extended periods of time. I think the longest water fast was 10 days. The longest juice fast, I did 40 days, and then I did 42 days. If Jesus did 40, I'm doing 42. So we do that as well.
I don't want to go that far, but you know, I want to try to institute some things in my maybe monthly regimen. And so you recommend maybe a 3-day water fast each month.
That's right. And look up the benefits of a 3-day water fast. You can find some great YouTube videos on that. I think I have, in my recent book, I covered it more comprehensively than it's ever been covered before. And that book was called Living Superfood Solutions. And that's I think it's a wonderful book. People should always remember, when you're talking about health-related issues, food is nature's most perfect medicine. Always go for the food solution first.
You know, I don't know why Richard haven't jumped in here, because this is one of the most healthiest brothers I know. Richard, we're here.
Y'all are touching that. And I have to, you know, as I'm hearing, and I hear what you're saying, Brother Keedy, as far as the superfood books that you have. And I think I would reemphasize to the Time for Awakening audience to who are looking at individual personal health to get manuals, get those insights, so that you can be able to, as you said, Elliot, create a regimen. Because I think that that's, you know, we have to create that regimen as our life and to construct the life that we're in. And we can't overlook the life we're in is a life that is a colonized life. So we're fighting. We're at war with things. Even to be able to find those foods, those natural foods, is not something that is easy to do in the environment that we're in, because the environment that we're in is made to actually kill us more than to rejuvenate, revitalize from our cellular level. So that's important. And as I went through this, the Conscious Roots book, it reinforces what you're making, the point that you're making. So I think it's clear. And I think that, you know, you're offering, And I think it was important that you said it's honorable that you have the ability to produce the written text for, you know, just like you were talking about earlier, whether Kemet, they put it on the wall, you got it on paper, and then now even transcribing it to, you know, some digital form.
And also it is in our cells.
Yeah.
They're all alone.
But it's very important for us to be able to, if it's in ourselves, to listen, to be silent, as you have in this book, so that you can hear what the plan is or what the instruction, but also to be able to actually engage it. You can have it written, but if we don't read it, it's just something written somewhere, and it has no effect on what your intent. And I appreciate the work.
And I'm glad you mentioned enjoy the silence. The silence is one of the most important themes within this book. Life is so noisy all around us. Constant, everything, fighting for our attention. We turn on YouTube and the short videos fight for our attention. We don't want to stop, keep going and going. It's so much noise. Please learn to live with the beautiful silence. It allows us to listen now to our DNA.
Brother Kitty, before you leave us, I want you to kind of give out all the information and the contacts and how people get the books. But I got a couple more questions for you.
I love your questions.
Listen, you talked earlier about the daily fast that you do, that you've incorporated. Talk about how it, now you said you only eat certain hours during the day. Now
you do a 6-hour window. Mm-hmm.
Now we've been taught, and you know, since we've been here in Western society, is breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You know, that's how you generally supposed to eat, or that's how we, that's how we eat. Now, talk about the hours of the day that you eat and the benefits of this. Just talk about it, because, like I said before, it's certain things that I want to start instituting. I mean, I've always ate healthy. My parents, we never ate pork. So it's certain things that I never did anyway, but it's just certain things I want to start kind of instituting, you know, as I move forward. So just talk about the benefits of your daily fast and how you do it and why.
Yeah. My intermittent fast, that's what it's called, intermittent fast. Mine is the 18-6 fast. So for 18 hours from 6 p.m., until 12 noon, I eat nothing at all. Now, what happens in those last 2 to 4 hours before I eat again, my body has depleted all of its available glucose floating in the blood, as well as the glycogen stores stored in the liver and in the muscle. And so therefore, on a daily basis, my body goes into the ketone stores. So it's actually burning fat that's called ketosis. And that is a very healthy process. Now, I got to be real careful right now because my weight is at its bottom. For me, a healthy weight is what I weighed when I was 25 years old. And at my height, 5'8.5", that would be 145 pounds. That is a perfect body mass index for me. This morning, I weighed myself and I weighed 137.6. Now, that is much lower than what I prefer, which is I have the luxury over the next few days of eating as much as I want, all I want, to put on 2 to 3 pounds, which I prefer to be comfortable at, probably at this stage at age 70, right around 140 to 142 pounds. So that's a beautiful thing. And I know I deviated from your question, but I know it was a good question. No, could you repeat?
Now, you said that from 6 in the morning to 12.
The intermittent fasting. Yeah. So I recommend, if you want to make some soft changes in your body, at least do 12 hours, which means for most of us, skipping breakfast, or in certain cases, like you may have seen me munching in the background. That was my bowl of oatmeal, which is the first meal I'll have in a day. I usually eat oatmeal, which got cinnamon in it, apple in it. It's got bananas in it, and ginger in it, as well as coconut oil. That's all in my oatmeal, and many times honey or turbinado. Another meal that I have early in the day, and especially if someone wants to take off weight, start your day with chia pudding. Mix some chia seeds with some almond milk, and then serve fresh fruit or frozen fruit with that chia pudding. And you can eat as much chia pudding as you want. It's a great source of omega-3 fatty acid, great source of fiber. And quite simply, when your gut microbiome is as healthy as when you're eating chia pudding, it helps your mental state as well. It's what's called the microbiome pituitary brain axis. And this supports our supreme prime mental health as well. So that's just the way I break my fast every day. Chia pudding and oatmeal, fortified oatmeal, fortified chia pudding. And according to my best outcome of prediction, I am scheduled, if I stick to this program and don't get hit by a car again, I will live to be between 122 to 126 years of age with, it says, unassisted living at age 118. That's when my body will begin to deteriorate in the last stages. I don't have a problem with that. Some people say, well, I don't want to live past 100. They're all decrepit. No, those are the people you hang out with. You can do better than that.
Before I ask that last question, okay, now you go up to 12 o'clock. Now you eat from 12 to what, 6?
12 to 6 p.m. I put all my meals in that category. I very rarely deviate from it. If I get started late, then I'll eat late. But I generally try not to deviate because I don't like to go to bed with food taking up all my energy. I prefer that have that energy for repairing my body while I'm sleeping. But from that time, I eat a lot of beans, legumes, fresh fruits and vegetables. I try and eat at least 7 servings of fresh fruits and vegetables every day. The USDA recommends 3. For a healthy vegan, they recommend 5. Well, I'm going to be at the top end of that, so I'm going for a 7.
Now, one of the last one I have on that is in the green family, greens. Now, when I was coming up, my dad used to love turnip greens and collards. And I never liked turnip greens. To me, they were bitter, but he loved them. So if they was on the plate, I had to eat it. But
and it's good that they're bitter too. It is good that you have to eat bitters.
So, but now I have the tendency to love kale, and from what I understand, kale is not good for you to eat all the time. But I love that.
Who told you that?
Well, you see a lot of stuff. That's why I'm asking you, because once in a while I'll eat collards. I don't bother with turnips anymore. Turnip greens. But I love kale. So what do you see as the best greens to consume regularly?
Kale, chard, beet greens, mustard greens, collard greens, turnip greens, arugula, spinach. I love my greens. You can tell I love my greens. And I grow my greens in my garden. In fact, I eat fresh greens out of my garden. I try and eat them 365 days a year. I live in Las Vegas, so we have a year-long growing season. But greens, mama said eat them greens. Mama never told you a deliberate lie to try and undermine your health. The greens have chlorophyll in it. Chlorophyll is the equivalent of blood hemoglobin. If you look at the two cell, the structure of those molecules side by side, they're exactly the same. The only thing different is that greens have chlorophyll. No, they have magnesium at the center that gives them that green color, while blood has iron at the center, the hemoglobin. So other than that, you can actually use fresh organic green juice as a intravenous solution.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. Richard, anything you, well, wait a minute, let me go to, cause a couple of these calls, they might have something on the issue, or they might want to throw something.
Yeah, man, take some calls. I love the calls.
Let's go to West, New Mexico. Are you there? Any questions for our guest? No, let me go here. Look, caller, any questions for our guest?
Hey, Brother Keedy. How are you, my brother?
It's great, great. That sounds like my brother Baye's voice.
Hey. I heard your show earlier today, my brother, and I was so sad to hear things may come to an end. I just want to thank you for your service, brother, for these 23 years. You know, but listen, right quick, where is your brother Pianchi at? Is he still with us?
I don't know when the Falcon Forum, we had used to broadcast our Sunday morning think tank, what's called the Falcon Forum. When the Falcon Forum shifted, there was a kind of a tension that was brewing in the background. I think you remember those days. And Baba Pianki disconnected from us. We since went to the mastermind, and I did for some time send out invitations to everyone who had been part of the Falcon Forum to join the mastermind. But unfortunately, he did not come along with us. So it's been 10 years or so since Baba Pianki and I have talked. I wish him the best. He's a good brother. He brought a conservative point to the program. And the tension kind of began with Donald Trump. Donald Trump kind of separated our group. And no need to go into that. People can believe how they want to believe.
But listen, I wanted to ask you right quick about that intermittent fasting.
That's right.
I've tried it, but, you know, I've had some success with it. But, you know, I've never fully committed to being a vegetarian. So I was wondering what is your suggestion doing intermittent fasting if you're not a vegetarian?
It's going to be beneficial, no doubt. Even if you are a carnivore, and I don't think you're a carnivore, I can look at your teeth, the shape of your limbs. Can you catch the food that you eat? Carnivores, humans are the only meat-eating animal that must cook the meat past a core temperature of 160 degrees, or the meat could kill them. Name one other animal that eats meat that they have to cook the meat. So I think you can do better. You can do better with an intermittent fast. If you need coaching, reach out to your brother. My number is easy to get. You can get it from the Conscious Rasta Press. Please do. I want to help you be the best you could ever imagine, my brother.
Well, you know, TD, I will definitely try and touch base with you soon in regards to, you know, maybe reviving the, you know, radio station that you have. But other than that, man, I wish you nothing but the best of success, brother. And the ancestors, I know, are going to definitely bless you. And thank you again for all of the service that you've given to African people, man. I really have appreciated your knowledge and wisdom over the years. And thank you again,
That's
brother.
Right. Well, thank you for being a part of this journey. I'm not dying. I'm not going nowhere. It's just that we're shifting. I carry this as far as I could carry it. And it's just got too heavy to carry anymore. And my personal life was suffering behind the scenes. But fortunately, we've got Brother Elliot and we got Brother Richard. And hopefully they will see through this conversation that we do a great job of working together. So, Baye, you're not going to miss me too much.
Thanks for your contribution.
Hold up, my brother.
Respect.
Mm-hmm.
Brother Keeney, the floor is yours. Any, you know, the ways that the folks can get the books, reach you on social media, anything, anything you want to say, the floor is yours.
Yeah. The Conscious Rasta Press. Conscious Rasta Press. That's my nom de plume, the Conscious Rasta. My book publishing company is the Conscious Rasta Press. If you go to the website right now, you're going to see 64 books. The newest one is now out, but I haven't got it linked there. I think there's something happening with Amazon. I had the hardest time loading this book up. So we're going to be up by tomorrow, no doubt. And you're going to want to get as many as you can. I advise, please take at least 2 to 4 books on centering on any given topic. Could be Pan-Africanism. There's probably 20 books on that. Food, nutrition, there's at least 30 books or more on that. Longevity, I've written 4 books on longevity. And commit yourself to becoming a teacher. Every one of us should be a master teacher for our life's perfections, what we've mastered, our life masteries. We should all be teaching, each one of us, teach 2, teach 4, teach as many as you can. because we're going to be lifting up this whole group. And quite simply, as it is right now, that is really, really hard task for so few of us to do it. Let me tell you, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, I am so proud of you two lions. And this network, Time for Awakening, you're a part of a larger network. Am I correct?
Yes, the Black Talk Radio Network.
That Black Talk Radio Network is a stellar, stellar performer. And it is here. It's no compromise. And it is for our people who accept nothing less than what we deserve. And so I am so absolutely proud of all of you. It's an honor for me to be invited here. And, you know, I was talking on my radio show a couple of weeks ago, about the dilemma. And five or six people mentioned that to come on with Brother Elliot and Time for Awakening. And come on, Brother Richard, Nelly, they got your back. Hey, I am not at all disappointed. I hope you two brothers were not disappointed at all in having me as your guest.
Oh, never.
Brother Keedy, thanks for being with us.
We do the best we can.
I'll be in touch with you, too, because the caller just mentioned some things that maybe we can go a little further in that conversation. I'll be in touch with you.
Mm-hmm. And also, I'm going to be sending both of you a copy of Biocolonialism, the Technocratic War on African Fertility and Food. I'll give you a warning. When you read the book, you're going to get really angry, specifically at the Gates Foundation.
We might be calling you back on then. In fact, we will be calling you back on.
Thanks. I hope so. That would be wonderful.
Thanks for being with us, sir. We'll talk.
Guidance and protection.
All right.
Take care now.
We'll be right back.
With host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Escape the digital plantation. IBBToMe.com, IBBToMe.TV, IBBToMeTV.com, IBBToMe.store are here for you. You are ready to be free of non-African social media. Don't run from danger, run to safety. IBBToMe.com is here for you. You are ready to be free of digital plantations to control your own products. IBBToMe.store is here for you. ABIBITUMI, Black Power, ABIBITUMI. The only word you need to know to join your global Commit You Black family. To join your interconnected Commit to You Black communities, escape the digital plantation now. IBBToMe.com, IBBToMe.TV, IBBToMeTV.com, IBBToMe.store. We are here for you. Escape the digital plantation.
A new era, a new phase of the struggle, where we have moved from a struggle for decency, which characterized our struggle for 10 or 12 years, to a struggle for genuine equality. And this is where we are getting the resistance, because there was never any intention to go this far. People were reacting to Bull Connor and to Jim Clark rather than acting in good faith for the realization of genuine equality.
Do you think white people in this country, and I'm talking about non-segregationists, people devoid or thinking they're devoid of racism, do you have any idea of what they want the Negro to be in America?
I think the vast majority of white Americans will go but so far. It's a kind of installment plan for equality. And they are always looking for an excuse to go but so far.
And know that this problem needs to be solved, and we can't keep relegating it to generation after generation because a few of us got a little money, a few of us got positions, a few of us have wealth, while the masses of our people are going steadily down. No one man can rise above the condition of his people. The brother said responsibility. Is it that we should let them take responsibility to do for us, or should we pool the knowledge that's at the table, the power that's in our community, the wealth that's in our community to change the harsh reality of black life in America? We have to do the job of fulfilling the black agenda.
Whites are expert game players in their contests to maintain absolute power. One of their time-honored gimmicks is to point to individual blacks who've achieved recognition. But look at Ralph Bunche. Think about Lena Horne or Marian Anderson. Look at Jackie Robinson. They made it as one of those who has made it. I would like to be thought of as an inspiration to our young. But I don't want them lied to. Name them for me. The examples of blacks who made it. For virtually everyone you name, I can give you a sordid piece of factual information on how they have been mistreated, humiliated. Not being able to fight back is a form of severe punishment.
I come here tonight and plead with you. Believe in yourself and believe that you're somebody. As I said to the group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document can do this for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do this for us. No Kennisonian or Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do this for us. If the Negro is to be free, he must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with the pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own Emancipation Proclamation. Don't let anybody take your manhood.
For an Awakening is a proud part of the Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent black digital and podcasting platform.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 8:37 on this Sunday edition of Time for an Awakening. We got about 20 minutes left to go on the program, so we'll transition to open forum. Richard.
Oh, here we go. Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm clear.
Okay.
Yeah, it was good, the conversation with Brother Keaty. Wealth of information. He always kind of, and I always like, whatever subject that we're on, I always like to bring it back to health, because I know he's a health expert, and some of his things I've always kind of instituted. I got several of the Living Superfood books, so I always kind of go back and forth to those things as almost like the Bible, so to speak, the Bible of health.
Yeah. And I'm glad to see that, in expanding that, from that core, because I think it's important, our personal health, biological health, and expanding it, to our social, but then, really bringing it down to that cellular. And as I said, in the opening, and looking at, when we're talking about from an organizing perspective and looking at cells, looking at protocells, because the whole thing of being in an environment, a singular cell, and then making multiple cells, and that's what the body is. It's a multiple of different cells, lungs, hearts, and all these different organs that function differently in the same environment, the body, the physical body itself. So that's how our social organization should be. But he's making it clear that you have to feed it certain things in order for it to be healthy. You feed it the unhealthy things and it deteriorates. And primarily that's what cancer is, right? It's a cell that feeds on other cells to its own destruction compared to cells that rejuvenate itself in relationship in a symbiotic way with other cells in order to maintain optimal health. And I'm glad to hear that he's able to put it down and demonstrate it in life and give, organizational lessons of how we can look at it from a liberating perspective, in the environment that we're in.
Richard, we, in conversation earlier, we talked about some of the current events that's happening now and what America is doing to try to strangle Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
And I ran across this article. And, we hear the propaganda here in this country. And some of our people, if we don't have counter information, then, some people have no alternative but to buy it if they don't do any research on their own. Mm-hmm. You remember that book that Cynthia McKinney wrote about how America creates shithole countries.
Right.
And it kind of reminded me of that when last week, I think they had a stay-in-place order or something for people that were visiting Mexico at the time because violence had broke out when they killed this guy that was a drug trafficker, known drug trafficker. I don't know, because you don't have a television, so I don't know whether you saw those reports.
No, I didn't say it, but I heard of what happened.
And you always hear the comments about the cartels down there have more weapons than the police down there. You've heard those comments. I've heard them too, but I never really, I didn't really pay much attention to it. But I stumbled across this article, and I want to share some of this with the listening audience. So we can start getting to, because... I hate seeing this narrative that some of our people are buying into this foolishness about some 250 and they're getting all excited about all this stuff. When this nation here and the white supremacist system that they have set up, it's detrimental to almost every nation on the face of this planet beside their own brothers. Mm-hmm. Now, let me read this, Richard. Give our people an idea. When you see people, and some of our people feed into these stupid narratives put out by these folks about, these people running in here across the border, we don't need them here. Like, if they didn't have these people here, that somehow these jobs would go to black people, which we have been getting these jobs since we come out of enslavement. So nothing would change for our people. It's just that these other folks wouldn't be here. But let me read something here, Richard, and let this sink in. This came from a published report in a couple of days ago, in fact, 228, I'm sorry. It was entitled, the header was Iron River, Mexico's cartel violence fueled by United States. Now, let me read this, Richard. Listen clearly. Time for awakening, audience. I'll read a couple, maybe three, four paragraphs. It says, Mexico was rocked this week by a wave of brutal violence after the capture of drug lord Nesimo Ruben Cervantes, I guess that's his name, a.k.a. El Mencio, as members of his powerful Jalisco New Generation cartel blew up trucks, fired on police stations, and engaged in gun battles with Mexican security forces. The chaos eventually claimed, before it was done, 62 people had been killed, including a pregnant woman caught in the crossfire. The scale of the carnage, as well as the arsenal involved, has underscored a key element of Mexico's struggle against organized crime cartels. Armed to the teeth, and most of the weapons come from the United States. As the smoke from the burning blockades cleared, Mexico's defense minister, Ricardo Trevilla Trujillo, said the vast majority of weapons seized after El Mencio's capture included a Barrett rifle, rocket launchers, grenades, and mortar rounds had come from across the border. Since the start of the administration of President Claudia Sheinbaum, Trujillo said, Mexican authorities had seized 23,000 weapons. Over 80% came from the United States.
Mm-hmm.
The ability of criminal groups to exercise this type of power, and this was his quote, the ability of groups to exercise this type of power and exercise this type of violence is closely linked to firearms trafficked, says Cecilia Menendez, an expert on Mexican organized crime. If we want to see less violence in Mexico, mm-hmm. this is an important conversation. Mexico has extremely strict gun ownership laws. The country only has two gun stores, both run by Mexican military, which enforces strict regulations on the purchase of weapons. But the U.S. loose gun regulations and national obsession with firearms means guns are readily available to buy and traffic south of the border. Now, Richard, let's look at that. Now, this country here, Mexico, is a large country, millions of people. You would agree.
Right.
They have extremely strict gun laws, and it's only two gun stores in the whole country, not in the city, not in particular, in the whole country, and they're run by the state.
Mm-hmm.
If you do manage to get a license in Mexico to own a gun, you can only own one gun, according to this published report. Only two stores in the whole country. But these drug cartels that are selling different volumes of drugs, and most of them to the United States that has insatiable drug habit,
right?
They make sure this country has weapons to basically run the government. They got more weapons than the cops. The weapons come from the United States. Now, let me finish this up. Only one more paragraph. Conservative estimates suggest as many as 700,000 American firearms are smuggled into Mexico every year. That would mean 2,000 U.S. guns cross the border every day. While large gun stores are important suppliers of firearms that end up in Mexico, 83% of these weapons come from independent gun dealers on border states such as Arizona, Texas, New Mexico, and California. The most powerful guns also come from these smaller stores, including 50 caliber sniper rifles, 7.62 mm assault style weapons, grenades, and others. 700,000 firearms smuggled into Mexico every year. This means 2,000 guns per day. And they worrying about people, 100 people coming across this border to get away from the violence that they create in these other countries. See, our people got to stop buying it. This system that we live under is evil. Just like Minister Farrakhan says in that clip, this system is rotten to the core. How in the hell you fuck up, excuse me, how in the hell you mess up other people's government by all these weapons coming in, they're coming from you. That's how they do. Listen, they use the same stuff in Africa and other countries. They find these people, just like the sister said, from the Afro-Venezuelans. They find these people that might be dissatisfied with the government. And you got plenty of people here dissatisfied with this crap. They find people dissatisfied, supply them with weapons. The next thing you know, something done broke out.
You know, and this, I like to just, and I think I take a different perspective than you, Elliot, in relationship, say, to acknowledging the making of this whole process that is, as you say, you know, rotten to the core. Because over, and it's really longer, but just using that 250 years, and this is where I kind of differ, because I think that we should narrate how over these centuries and the amount of people that they have destroyed in order to be able to create this. And in that destroying, because they create, and you just alluded to, collaborators, you know, that work with them against their own people. You know, in order to be, because those guns using Mexico and those, like you said, the state only got two stores. They not only have some, and not only do they have the manufacturers over on this side who are producing, because it ain't like these gun runners are manufacturers of the guns. The manufacturers are considered legitimate companies.
Exactly. Exactly.
They ain't criminal companies. They're legitimate companies that produce the gun. Well, as I know it right now, I have not heard that they got illegal manufacturing companies making guns, rocket launchers, you know, high tech stuff that they're selling.
Now, Richard, what's going on? Go ahead, finish your thought.
Go ahead.
Well, here's a question for you. Because all you see on the news is these people trying to run across the Rio Grande, these people sneaking into the country. How many people do you see that's arrested for trafficking these guns in Mexico? This Mexican authority said that over 700,000 weapons been smuggled in yearly. So that means over 2,000 a day. So where's the guys that's being arrested for smuggling in rocket launchers, 750 cal weapons? You know, where they at? Where they at? Where's the gun? The gun companies, Remington and others, that's producing these countries that guns just put on the carpet for doing this. Where they at?
And they're the same companies that have contracts with the government to produce those guns, that ammunition, for the military service that they go ahead and utilize. So, you know, they're making the money on both hands. And as you said, and then they have an agency. Isn't that what DEA is about? They have an agency that's supposed to be on the border. And I ain't taking nothing away from those men and women that work. I think maybe a portion of them are part of the gun smuggling trade. But they are putting out money to actually have people who's supposed to be able to capture those 2,000 guns a day.
Yeah.
And well, they got to be Americans also. They ain't Mexicans coming over, you know, making a deal with with other Mexicans and smuggling the guns back. They got to be making a deal with Americans.
It's clear they are. So you destroy people's economy, you make it a drug economy, you destroy the economy, create violence in the place, and then when you see thousands of people running out of there, running over here, you create some narrative that, oh, we don't want you here, and this, that, and the other. What? What kind of? Wait a minute. It's the same scenario can be used in these inner cities. All these weapons being putting these in the cities. Where they coming from?
And Elliot, those people who are running here, then they hire them. They hire them. Even though they're legitimate companies, whether they're doing farm work, whether they're doing construction work, they're hiring them. They destroy them being able to be self-sufficient in the country they are with those skill sets. Brother Keedy was talking about food sovereignty. They were growing their own food. Some with self-sufficient, but drugs become the major, commodity economy. And they get run down, come here, and then they hire them. Now they're trying to round them up, but they ain't rounding up the companies that are hiring them.
You're rounding them up
companies
and send them back to the same environment that they were running from that you created.
Right.
See, our people got to stop buying this foolishness, man. Listen, that's why I don't care about nobody else. This is me. That's why my pet peeve with these darn black elected officials, these people are a disgrace. Because if I know this information or can find it out, you mean to tell me you can't? You got a staff that you paid. They are well paid and you well paid. And not only well paid on the taxpayers, though, you take all kind of money from these special interest groups. You don't know this stuff is going on. You can't speak on it. You're the conscience of a Congress. What? If I got a conscience like that, I don't need evil. You don't need that little thing where you saw the devil on one shoulder and an angel on the other. You don't need that. Come on, man. These people are a joke. Destroy people's economy like that, flood the country with weapons or all the negative stuff, and then turn around like they didn't flood black communities with drugs. You can't get a decent job to hold you, keep your family afloat. Your black men being jailed. Every time you look, it's new weapons in the community, and then they point the finger at you. Well, that's a microcosm of what's going on in these other countries.
And being redundant, and that's why I'm hearing it. I'm talking about celebratory, but there has to be a voice about, and black people have to have a voice. We're the oldest forced immigrants in this country. We're the ones that have, there's narrative about what other people have done.
Well, we were no immigrants now, Richard. Don't get that twisted. We are no immigrants.
No, that's what they say.
Yeah, well, oh, okay.
That's the language they're using, that we're forced immigrants.
Okay. Well, all right.
You could say enslaved, but the point is that we've been here and watched, and some have participated with then and now. And for me, that's important to bring up, the good, the bad. We had, some of us has participated and even tried to, in order to be able over these years to allow this thing to happen, even by being silent is the point I'm trying to make. And when we say it, they're saying we're complaining. We're acting, with a defeatist, mindset compared to explaining how this system worked in order to maintain itself. And it works to do that at the expense of people of color. And what you played with Rubio, they're saying, we need to consolidate to continue to do that. And I'm glad that Brother Keedy brought up in the beginning, the NATO versus the BRICS, Brazil, India, China, Russia, South Africa versus these European countries. Because if you play that Rubio, another part of that Rubio, when he said that, they clapped.
Yeah, it was rousing applause. They don't have no problem with it.
He said, yeah, I noticed this one right now. He might be a little brass, but he just being rough with y'all to make y'all understand. And they said, I understand.
Yeah. All of them there. All of them. And it wasn't a black face in that. All of them white as snow. But you got black people here talking about our European allies. Are you crazy?
What comes to mind is was it Lincoln who said to Frederick Douglass, you know, when they were talking about immigrating black folks to, what was that, Panama? If they were like white like you, you know what I mean? White acting like you.
Yeah, if you had the same, what did he say? I got to read that. I've got to produce that again so I can read it, read his words.
That's telling.
Yeah.
In order, you know what I mean? You know, and that's what they're saying. This is what a certain group of black folks, I ain't saying that they're all in the Congress. I'm saying we're everywhere. Harry had to say, look, if y'all get me going here and you turn around, whether it's real or not, the metaphor hold true. I got to take you out of here.
Yeah.
But the other part of the side of it is Negroes are saying, well, I want to go back.
Yeah, but Richard, that's never really talked about. The narrative of her having those weapons was, you know, if she sees some whites to try to take her and she was going to use them. Sure, that's without question. But the other use for those weapons was some of her own, that if she found out that they was working for the other side, she was going to use it on them.
You know, so it's important as we're talking about where we go from, you know, where do we go from here? Which is where we've been saying every generation over, just using that 250 marker. We said we done did everything. Look, all we want to do is deal with our land. All we want to do is build our community. All we want to do is educate our young. And they said, and do it. And then they said, oh, wait a minute. And that don't come from some just irate individual, just like these guns that go into Mexico. They don't just come from, you know, some hooligans. The manufacturers of that, they got corporate people that are engaged in the process. That's the only way they can get the guns.
Exactly. Listen, Richard, it's no way. There's 700,000, over seven, listen, this is a published report. Over 700,000 weapons. And I ain't talking about no Saturday night, they don't think they make that anymore. The Saturday night special. These high powered weapons. Over 700,000 of them reach another country unless somebody is involved. That ain't no, you know, like you and me trying to smuggle something across a border. Come on, man. I'm telling you, wow.
Yeah. It's important.
Richard, I did get confirmation. The 22nd, the show on the program on the 22nd, we supposed to have Cynthia McKinney join us, Richard.
So, great.
Hopefully, without any snafus. And I want to thank Brother Otis because he kind of pulled my coat to something she was doing. So I reached out to her and she said that she's more than willing to come on and talk about what's going on. So, Brother O, thumbs up to you. Yeah, well, before we leave tonight, let me get the lineup
on. You know, that's duty, Brother Elliot. That's duty.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Yeah, before we leave tonight, let me get the lineup on Time for an Awakening Media. Mondays, Wednesdays, Fridays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. That's African Perspectives with Brother Oshie. Always interesting topics, dialogue, and guests on African Perspectives. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Later on Monday evenings, Our Story with Baba West Johnson and Brother Johnny, live from New Orleans, Louisiana. And then they double back on Wednesday at the same time, 7 to 9 p.m. from New Orleans, Louisiana, Our Story. Thursday, the door is always open for the Black Liberation Movement in Mississippi. Brother Patrick Lumumba Sister Crystal Denise, Brother Rodney Lowe, Brother Marcus Hayes, four hosts. Malik Hayes, I'm sorry. Four hosts, one mission, the Black Liberation Movement in Mississippi. That's Thursdays, 8 to 10. On Sundays, 5 to 6, Pinckney to Pinckney. And from 6 until time for an awakening. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion as always, and we'll be back next week, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the thing that they'll soon have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Soon it will be their turns to try and save the world. Right now they seem to play such a small part of.
Children, to save the children.